Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Graham Kerner from Kerner Perspective and Mia Kruger from Kruger International. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Graham, welcome to the show. Let's take some stock and just look back at, you know, how we've performed, especially international markets, US markets to be specific, in the month of April. I mean, the S&P 500 down about 8.8%, the NASDAQ down 13%. What does it mean for long-term investors? I mean, we're back at bear territories, like you were saying before we came into the show.
Good evening, Brad. I think what it's telling us is that I think some of those sort of excess valuations, particularly in US techs, in the NASDAQ listeds, have been sort of unraveled. Obviously, a lot of anxiety around quite a few things, not least of which is the fact that monetary policy authorities or central banks need to tighten monetary policy at a really awkward time. So inflation is like a runaway train at the moment. But obviously there are quite a few headwinds for the global economy. So I think, you know, they want to tap the brakes, but they can't tap the brakes. And I think a lot of people sort of generally feel the Fed will hike 50 basis points, but not only will they hike interest rates, but they are going to withdraw some of that stimulus in the form of quantitative easing that seen their balance sheet swell. So I think there's a very nervous state in the markets, particularly in more highly valued stocks. And you mentioned the NASDAQ, which, you know, if you look over, let's say on a year-to-date view, is down almost 20%, and from its highs, obviously, a little bit more than that. So we're in bear market territory. The question is just, you know, what the market is going to do when the Fed does the unthinkable and starts hiking and withdrawing some of the QE.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Fed. We've got that pending decision tomorrow to see if it's going to be, I don't know, 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, 0.7, you know, go up the scale, right? Mia, welcome to the show. I want to carry on with you here. I mean, so this was supposed to be sort of quote-unquote easy, you know, earnings season, but it's been very manic. I say easy because the expectations were very low overall from, you know, the likes of Bloomberg, Reuters, etc. I mean, they were expecting companies on average to increase their earnings by 7.7%, and I'm seeing a lot of companies here are struggling, and I mean, it's reflected in their share prices, you know. A lot of them, well, some of the big headlines, down double digits during this earnings season. What did you see last week as, you know, some of those headlines?
Yes, I mean, Bright, you've got a spot on. I think we've been speaking about the fact that, as Graham also alluded to, the tech shares, for instance, have had a very good run. Whether they're good companies or not, their prices have really run quite hard, and there has been some profit taking. The fact that that a company like Google, for instance, who missed on the revenue side due to the fact that they came from a very high base of advertising income from something like YouTube, yeah, they still had a strong growth in their earnings. And the fact is that it just isn't as strong as we saw over the last 2 years, where people have been staying at home and using tech excessively, spending many, many hours on Netflix. And those type of numbers, everyone knew that they were going to moderate at some point, but no one expected them to moderate in this quarter, and also the same time that a potential war broke out and inflation started to run away and the Fed had to tighten. So it's really a perfect storm of creating a lot of market uncertainty, as Graham also mentioned. And I think that is the main issue here. Prices are more volatile.
Yeah.
But in real effect, one of the most interesting things for me this morning was when I showed it to our team, was that the volatility on bonds have actually been double what it's been on equities of late.
Yeah,
and that's due to the fact that the anticipated increase that we are going to see tomorrow, and then what's lying ahead, whether there is a 75 basis points rate hike coming or not, that's really creating a lot of uncertainty from a base where people have really seen bonds as a safe haven, which it's debatable whether it really is one.
Yeah, and we saw overnight, you know, the 10-year, you know, treasury bonds basically touching 3%, you know, a number that we haven't seen since 2017. So there's a lot happening in the markets. But let's jump into our questions. We'll start in the SMS line. We've got someone here who's saying, good evening, good people. Please give me your opinion on Netflix at these levels. Graham?
Yeah, Netflix is a difficult one. They obviously, as Mia was saying, you know, the COVID world and lockdowns really played into the hands of companies like Netflix and Google. And you saw with the last results that Netflix was starting to shed customers. And I think all the management consultants would say, okay, well, it's time to hike your prices because that way you can make more out of a shrinking customer base. I'm not entirely sure that works. I mean, it's looking quite interesting having come back as much as it has, because I still think that, you know, there is a content war of epic proportion brewing. And I think Netflix will be one of the last ones standing. But, you know, people are doing silly things around content at the moment, creating their own channels, and that's going to make it a little bit awkward. But I do think that ultimately Netflix will be one of the winners. But on the short term, it's looking like a very bumpy story, and I think it's going to be very volatile for a while. So I think coming back to your original question to me, which I didn't answer elegantly, was, you know, what do long-term investors do? And I think, as Mia suggested, you know, if you still believe in the business case and all you've seen is share prices come down because those sort of ridiculous expectations have been moderated, I think businesses like Netflix could actually do quite well. But I think it's going to get worse before it gets better for a company like Netflix. So I would probably wait before I jump in.
Yeah, I mean, you've made a great point that, you know, fortunes will be made and lost in, you know, the streaming competitions. I mean, the latest to fall, we saw CNN Plus, which managed to gain about 20,000 new subscribers after spending over $600 million on the platform. So I'm not sure if they're proud of themselves on that, and they had to shut it down, obviously, because there was no growth. I mean, it's maybe there's a reason why Netflix is Netflix and it's not called CNN Plus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Amir, do you have any comments there on Netflix?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, we need to be cognizant of the fact here in Africa we don't subscribe to half the subscription services that the U.S. Citizens do. And, I mean, they've got a huge population. They say that the general person there subscribes to nearly five different streaming services.
Wow.
So there are still quite a number of people that will most probably cancel one or two or more of their streaming services during this year as prices pinch them. And that's the expectation. There's an expectation of about 150 million subscribers still canceling during this year. But the fact is that Netflix also announced that they will be changing their business model. They will be bringing in ad revenue, which will be a big driver for them, something that they haven't done up to now. Disney has already followed to say that they'll also be bringing in the ad revenue. And what that really means is that they'll be making cheaper subscription options available to people who don't mind an ad every here and there. And that will help them, and that'll be a big boost to revenue for these companies. And it could possibly even more than make up for the subscribers they've lost in terms of the revenue they'll gain.
Look, as a South African, I don't know any better, right? I mean, you look at Showmax, they still give us ads anyways, even though you pay for the premium service. So we don't know any better. How about they lower our subscriptions to like $3 like India and then serve us ads anyways? No one is going to complain in Africa, at least, speaking on behalf of Africans, obviously. We have a question from the Duke of Advocacy who says, please ask your guests about capital appreciation and, you know, its future prospects. He says he's going to be watching, apparently. Mia, capital appreciation, is it? Do you follow this one?
No.
Graham?
Yeah, so what I know about it is there's obviously one of these special asset vehicles, From what I can remember, they've got mainly payment technology, so sort of, you know, what do you call the point of sale type technology. You know, some people are quite excited about it. When we had a look at it, obviously, there's quite a lot of runway for them in South Africa. But having said that, there's also quite a lot of competition. So I'll bow to friends who know more about this and say, you know what, although it looks interesting, there are probably better technologies out there. So, yeah, I'll probably sit this one out.
So you'll be sitting, you know, the payment giant wannabe out. Okay, interesting. We've got a question here from Ryan Rivera who says, what does the team think about Amazon, especially on their latest pullback? So, Mia, Amazon is something you look at?
Yes, definitely. I think it's still a great company. I mean, they one of the largest consumer discretionary companies globally. They did have a very strong price run. You know, they've done well over the many years. They have grown exorbitantly. They're still growing. They are under pressure. I mean, when we see their numbers are coming in lower than what it has over the years. But still, it's not a company that's going to go anywhere soon. To become a substantial competition for Amazon is really, really difficult due to the fact that they have such a large market share. And I think it's a company that's just going to press on. They'll still make money. They probably will not. They'll moderate their growth rates as we've seen. And yes, from these levels, maybe still a little bit further to go, but they're still a great company. And if you're a consistent investor, then it's always a good idea to buy good companies.
Oh, how dare you, Mia, speak about Amazon like that? I mean, it's been flat for the past 3 years, okay? I mean, I'm looking at a stat here from Michael Batnick. He's saying AWS's run rate is about $74 billion a year. For comparison purposes, I mean, General Electric. So basically, it's bigger than these companies. GE, Disney, Tesla, Goldman, Nike, Coca-Cola, Netflix, and Starbucks. You know, in terms of, you know, their run rate. And that's just their cloud business.
They could be unbundling if they do that. Anytime you'll be sitting with some great major businesses.
Okay, fantastic. Graham, any thoughts on Amazon?
I think Mia hit the nail on the head. I mean, what Bezos has done, I remember having a look at it when I read the Everything Store many years ago and sort of looked at that time with whatever it was, 12 or 15 years worth of history and, you know, saw they hadn't really produced, I think it was more than $2 billion of profit up to that point. And the reason is Bezos has determined to take over the universe. You know, he just keeps investing in growth, and not everything he touches turns to gold. But what he's done is it created incredible infrastructure, as Mia said. You know, trying to take Amazon on in the countries where they are established is no small feat. So
yeah,
I would agree with what Mia said. Although it's done nothing for a period of time, it's been trading on such a ridiculous multiple for the last few years that
it's unwinding,
gravity eventually
takes
over. Yeah, but yeah. I think that's the, you know, coming back to the introductory question, Bright, I think that's the world we're in now. We're seeing a lot of these techs that, you know, people just said bigger fool theory, just buy them, don't worry about the valuations, don't worry about the Fed, don't worry about anything, just buy them, they're going up. But what happens is at a point in time, those businesses grow up and the earnings growth rates will moderate. But, you know, you saw it in Microsoft maybe 15 years ago where the share price started coming off, but operationally they were just doing the right things. And I think you're going to find companies like Amazon and maybe Netflix a little further down doing exactly that. So as they grow up and cease to be these sort of white knuckle, you know, blue sky tech companies and actually just become almost, you know, regular businesses. So I think Amazon's a really good business, but I think, you know, the disappointment of the market with the kind of multiple that they're on, I agree with Mia. I think it's going to be difficult for a while. But if you want to play in e-commerce, I think that is the long-term winner in that space.
We've got a question here from Russell who says, good evening. I was wondering whether either of the panelists cover DataTech. It's announced today that an acquisition in the satellite and space infrastructure business did not improve market interest, and I could not discern from the SENS what the revenue impact of this acquisition is going to be or is expected to be. So anyone following DataTech and the acquisition? Mia?
I saw the news come out, but I can't tell him at this stage what the revenue impact will be of this acquisition now.
I think the fact that there was no reaction in the share price, the market is telling you.
Yeah.
It's no biggie. Maybe I'm wrong, Graham. Can you correct me there?
Well, I think, you know, right, there were four shares up on the top 40 today, and they were all platinum partners. The fifth best performer was BHP, which was down 0.2. That sort of creates the backdrop. So, but I think if I understood it correctly, Northern Sky is actually more of a market research company on satellite and sky penetration rather than being a satellite provider or anything like that. So I think we must remember that Analysys Mason, I think, although it's a high EBITDA margin business, is a small contributor to profits, and you would assume that this is not going to be a massive transaction for them. So I think that's the backdrop at its core. Data Tech is still largely a technology hardware provider and a relatively low margin business. And I think the truth of it is it trades on a very, very high rating or multiple for what is really I don't want to call them a box dropper, but effectively somebody who moves mainly equipment where the margins are pretty low. I mean, if you look at the hardware division, I think that you're talking about a couple of percent EBITDA margins. So I think that's probably the backdrop, that those are the real drivers of the business. It's hardware, networking, and stuff like that, and security. And I think the consulting business where this is going to slot in is a relatively minor part.
Yes, sorry, Mia, you were saying before I distracted you there?
No, I mean, I think Graham really summed it up very nicely there. So it's not a great margin business at this stage. Again, it's a consulting business to get to help them to really broaden their horizons and look at what the opportunities is for beyond 5G and on the satellite technology side, which we know it's a rapidly converging area in the market. So, yes, not quite sure what the impact would be, especially on the margin, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Anytime soon.
Okay, so that still remains to be seen. Yes. On the SMS line, we have someone here who says, what do you guys think of Tiger Brands at these levels? They never sign off and say who they are, so kind of don't know who this person is. Tiger Brands, Graham?
So Tiger Brands has been one of those companies that I've loved to hate for a long time now, I'm being facetious, but it was a business that was always afforded some sort of magical, mystical valuation and rating, in spite of the fact that it, in many ways, wasn't able to pass inflation on and improve margin. They just, took on the inflation. But I will say, when I had a look at them the other day, I said, jeepers, this thing has fallen really far and is actually looking quite cheap. I'm not mad about the model. I still think premium food brands in an economy like South Africa, where, let's be honest, the retailers want to push volume and they're happy to use own, store brands. I think that still is a difficult operating environment. But I think Tiger Brands is looking very, very cheap right now. So I think for somebody who says, well, after listeriosis or, all the scandals they've been through, and including the Nigerian fiasco, we wrote them off, I think you could have another look at them. But, the bottom line is I don't think it's a great business. It's got great brands, but actually monetizing those, and when I say monetizing them, growing their earnings sustainably, materially above inflation, is going to be very difficult given their footprint, but it looks really cheap right now.
Yeah, look, I listened to the interview, with the CEO of Unilever, basically talking us through the earnings for the quarter, basically saying all the inputs costs and, they're rising, and unfortunately they can't do anything about it, and they'll take them on the chin, so to say. Just basically spells out what's going on in the fast-moving consumer goods space, and it's not a space I'd want to be in right now. We've got a question here. Sorry, you want to speak about Tiger Brands? Sorry, before I move on.
I just want to say the same as you say. So it's very difficult for any of these companies like Tiger Brands, like Unilever, to pass on the inflation that they are experiencing and the input costs onto the consumer. who's already stretched at this stage. So yes, without losing market share. So
yeah.
Not my favorite pick.
Yeah, we would want to, South Africa to have, double the current employment rate, for anything to be seriously happening in the economy. And then people are going to look at these aspirational brands, as they call them, switching to those and obviously consuming those. And then that might boil very well for a company like Tiger. So let's not write them off just yet. Jonathan is asking, says, hi, what's the panel's view on Montauk Renewables, given the current energy crisis in Europe? So Montauk Renewables, I think they've got operations in the U.S., just forgot the state, in New York and somewhere else, sorry. Do you follow it, Graham, Mia?
No, not very closely.
Graham?
Yeah, if I say that they're an alternative energy, basically taking landfill sites and creating, the methane gas and stuff, I've probably exhausted my knowledge on the company. But I think there's a lot happening in the alternative energy space. And, I mean, what we're seeing with the Russian-Ukrainian situation, I think is making people once again aware of the fact that if we're serious about, tilting and pivoting away from crude and say Russian gas, we're going to have to come up with alternatives. I can't add much more than that.
Okay, it's unfortunate, but there are many of these niche, very specialized renewable plays or alternative energy, and someone has to cover, some of them eventually. We'll find someone. Sean says, what's the outlook for Sasol if the reports that they have hedged, at around $70 a barrel in terms of, the oil price. Has the balance sheet improved over this time? Will the rand depreciation create more profits? Mia?
Well, I think, the fact is that they are sitting on the right side of the right commodities where the prices have increased, but they also have the problem of exports out of South Africa, so they're still very... SA dominant in terms of their risks. So they are not benefiting as much from the higher oil price as we would want to see. And also the fact is that the rand has remained pretty strong during this time that the oil price has weakened. So if oil prices continue to weaken, which there is a very substantial chance that it would, or not weaken, strength or, go higher and become more expensive.
Yes.
There is a very strong chance that it would, given the fact that natural gas is under such pressure in the whole of Europe, then it would benefit Sasol. And they have paid down debt. They haven't, I don't think that has been sort of, to my mind, done as successfully as they would have hoped it to be. They didn't have to do any further rights issues, etc. But so that at least didn't come to the market further. But the share price has recovered quite strongly. As I say, still sit with quite a lot of SA specific risk, and I think that there are easier ways to gain exposure to energy prices if you think that that's a hedge against the market at this current state.
Yeah, and I think my boss, Paul Theron, still needs to, go to the closest river and find a crocodile to play with it, because that's what he said he would if Sasol recovers. So that's going to be very interesting. I have to take our stock picks for the evening. I'll start with you, Graham.
I'm going to go for one that's not for widows and orphans or for the faint-hearted, but I'm going to go with... City Lodge. Obviously, there's some debt that's due later in this year, which creates a bit of anxiety. But I think for us, if I could be silly and say it's almost an underlying property NAV play with hotel optionality, because I think the real value of that underlying portfolio is, when I say considerably, I mean really considerably higher than it's currently sitting in their books at. Obviously, a lot of work to do. The KZN floods, of course, would have hurt. A lot of things have hurt them. But I think it's a fundamentally well-run business. It's a good model. We understand things like the Airbnb, playing around and causing pain. But I think at its core, it's a good business. I think the underlying property value gives you a massive margin of safety, but I don't think it's going to tear away from, you know, 4.50 to 7 rand in a hurry. So I think it's for patient investors, and you can see it in the shareholder base. You know, you've got the PIC, Alan Gray, Coronation in there. So I think you're in with good company, and a little bit of good news will go a long way for this one over, I think, a 2 or 3 year view.
Okay, let's see what the bankers say later this year if they agree with us. Mia, your stock pick for the evening?
Yes. Well, tonight I'm going with Alphabet or Google, as its ticker shows us. But yes, the company came out. It reported the ad revenue from, especially from YouTube, much lower than was anticipated due to the fact mainly that it was from quite a high base. The share price is down about 24% from its high, so it is much more attractive than it was before. And still, if you consider the fact that they have their Google Cloud business that is growing, it's not making money yet, but it is actually growing at one of the strongest paces of all the cloud businesses out there. Yeah. It can still become quite a market dominant player. So this is definitely an area that hasn't been the focus of the market when looking at the whole of the Alphabet, I think, at this stage, where ad revenue was the main driver for revenue growth and excitement over the last couple of years. The cloud business could definitely come into its own and start driving a substantial part of the revenue for Google going forward.
Okay, so you're buying Alphabet, you know, with optionality on the cloud side, okay? Makes a bit of sense. Thank you very much, Mia. And thanks to you, Graham, as well. Thanks to my guest, Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective and Mia Kruger from Kruger International. Stockwatch is back again tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.